studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA, it's Sunday House Call. Stay with Dr. Barry Dworkin for the next 2 hours, and we guarantee you'll go away learning at least one new thing to keep you on the road to better health. Here's your host, Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good afternoon and welcome to the December 2nd, 2007 edition of Sunday House Call. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and we're broadcasting live on 1070 CFAX in Victoria, 1290 CFRW in Winnipeg, 1050 Chum in Toronto, AM 800 CKLW in Windsor, and from the studios of News Talk Radio 580 CFRA here in Ottawa as we wait for our 35 centimeters to fall on our heads over the next day. And I hope you're having a great time in Victoria. Coming up on the show today, we're going to be talking about a new test that is something that was developed at the University of Alberta, a new diagnostic test to describe and determine the types of cancer somebody may have when looking at various genetic abnormalities in people. That is, looking for what we call genetic markers or biomarkers or fingerprints. And Professor Linda Pilarski, who is Canada Research Chair in Biomedical Nanotechnology and Professor in the Division of Experimental Oncology in the Department of Oncology at the University of Alberta Cross Cancer Institute, will be talking about this new technique that they developed. It's a more of a refinement on a technology that exists, except this technology that exists costs millions of dollars and requires a lot of expense to do each individual test. They've managed to bring this down now to $1,000 to do 10 tests at the same time and provide an answer in hours as opposed to days or weeks. So that would be very interesting coming up in about a half an hour's time. We'll be speaking to Professor Pilarski. And as well, a question of whether you really need antibiotics to treat abscesses. Now, this may seem a bit strange considering an abscess is caused by bacterial infections and we usually will drain them and use an antibiotic to treat them. But in this age of what we call MRSA, or methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, where many antibiotics don't work against it, are there other ways to try to reduce the rates of resistance, bacterial resistance, and still yield the same results? Dr. Worth Everett, who's assistant professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania, will be joining us in just a couple of minutes, and we'll be talking about that with him. And as well, your calls and questions coming up in our second hour at 1-800-580-2372, 1-800-580-2372. And as always, I encourage you to call early on. In fact, we open up the phone lines about 10 minutes before the end of this hour for you to get on and ask any questions you like. And we'll spend time trying to answer them for you. 1-800-580-2372. You can start calling in about 40 minutes from now. Many of us have had the unpleasant experience of developing a skin abscess. The approach to treating this infection is variable and can include the use of antibiotics. It would seem to make sense because abscesses are usually caused by bacteria. However, in a study published in the April 2007 edition of the Annals of Emergency Medicine, physicians from the University of Pennsylvania Hospital wanted to determine if there was evidence to support antibiotic use in conjunction with draining the abscess. And I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Worth Everett, assistant professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine and clinical researcher in epidemiology and biostatistics at the University of Pennsylvania and co-author of the study. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
My first question for our listeners to get a good definition of what an abscess actually is and what its natural history is.
So an abscess is a collection of pus, purulent material that collects under the skin. These abscesses usually start off as infected pores or hair follicles. All of our skin is colonized with bacteria, and for various reasons, the circumstances make themselves optimal. Either these hair follicles or pores can get clogged, occluded, and allow the bacteria to overgrow. The body's response is to mobilize the cells that fight infection, the white blood cells, to mobilize to those areas. And the body does a good job of walling off these particular areas, and therefore you get this buildup of pus.
Are there certain underlying disease states that can contribute to the development of abscesses for certain people?
Well, it's accepted that conditions such as diabetes, where your sugar levels are quite high, is a predisposing factor. It not only inhibits your immune system somewhat, but allows the blood supply to not be as the blood supply in diabetics is not optimal either. Other conditions, other states of immunocompromise, if you're on steroids, happen to have other systemic infections or conditions, you're on chemotherapy, things that inhibit your body's natural immune system to function optimally. And then there are some lifestyle behavioral things that predispose people. Intravenous drug users, people who have indwelling catheters, things that break down or bypass the normal barriers that our body has in place that are commonly thought of to be risk factors.
Now, from your experience in treating the abscesses, I'm curious to know what prompted you to conduct this particular study.
Well, that's a great question. Where I practice is a university setting. We have a teaching program for emergency medicine residents, and we're constantly pushing the envelope and asking people, always asking the question, why are we doing what we're doing?
Mm-hmm.
And one of our curious, my co-author, Abigail Hankin, we see a lot of abscesses in the emergency department, and she posed this question, do we need to be giving antibiotics to abscesses? And so that was the impetus for doing the literature review and beginning to ask the question of is it really necessary in the setting of just a simple abscess?
Mm-hmm. How did you select the studies for the review?
So it's a standardized process where we do a literature review. The computerized databases now list all the published, using several different databases, combing through the published literature, honing it down to those that were in English, basically so that we could interpret. And then we have specified criteria, for instance, the studies had to deal with abscesses, and they had to examine whether abscesses were incised and drained and if antibiotics were given or not given. And so, combing through about 13, over 1,000 articles, we hone it down to about just a handful.
Now, in those particular studies, what was it you were looking for in terms of how they were conducted, and what were those studies telling you when you reviewed them?
Well, so what we're looking for in terms of the studies is there enough data in those studies to number one, make sure that it met all those inclusion criteria. Number two is, did they follow patients out long enough to determine whether there was a clinical cure or improvement? And number three, was there enough information in the articles to comment on, in some form or fashion, whether giving antibiotics together with an incision and drainage procedure was any different than no antibiotics and an incision procedure? And so the article, there's many different study designs and how you conduct a study. The most rigorous is a randomized clinical control where patients are randomized beforehand to receive a antibiotic or particular intervention. In this case, it'd be an antibiotic or no antibiotic, and then everybody gets the incision procedure. Those are the highest quality, and unfortunately, there's just not many of those out there. We hope to have provided the impetus to change that, but unfortunately, the most common type of study design is a cohort study or a convenient sample where, like we see in our emergency department, we see literally hundreds and thousands of abscesses. It's a collection of experiences saying these, when we give antibiotics to this group of people, they seem to do this well compared to when we don't give antibiotics, they seem to do this well. So that's the least rigorous type of study. Unfortunately, those are the most common. The results that we found were, after reviewing all this, and it was spanned about 30 years, was that the cure rates, and what I mean by that is that there was clinical improvement, was about 90% or higher, regardless if you gave treated the patient with antibiotics or not. And the reason that's important, and probably the reason I'm talking to you today, is that mm-hmm. we're in an era where people clamor for patients clamor for antibiotics, and there's a big missing link here between, you know, thinking that you have an infection and infection equals antibiotics. And what happens is with our this data shows that we get the same clinical cure, the same amount of improvement when we don't give antibiotics. And that's useful and beneficial because we're in an era of antibiotic resistance. There's multi-drug organisms out there that are as a byproduct for this. And we believe that this evidence shows that if you just incise and drain the pus from these abscesses, that you get as good of improvement as adding an antibiotic. Plus, there's additional costs. There's the side effects of antibiotics.
Right.
So everything comes with a cost.
So this has significant implications, as you've mentioned, because there are certain populations where there is high prevalence of methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, or MRSA, and people hear about this in the news all the time about how this particular microbe is difficult to treat. So if we can get around having to use an antibiotic, in this case that may not even work anyway, and the incision and drainage works just as well, we should really stick with that, given the evidence shows that you can just do that and have the same result.
Right. I mean, that's the general principle here. So there was kind of two additional findings that were also striking when we go through and do this methodically, is that it turns out that you mentioned methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. So this is a lot of this is in the news, and going back through the data, the prevalence of this used to be in the single digits, just a couple of percent of all infections that would be cultured would be methicillin-resistant. Nowadays, the prevalence on both the West Coast and here on the East Coast in our institutions is somewhere between 50 and 60%. Now, those are striking differences over the past few years. One of them is I think we're being more selective in who we culture. So while those numbers are shocking or quite high, I think it's probably we ended up selecting particular patients that that we might think are at higher risk, and we culture those. So I'm not sure those reflect probably mm-hmm. the true incidence or prevalence that's out there. The second thing is that there are at least a couple of studies that show that even if you give an antibiotic that is similar to methicillin, so some of the penicillins and cephalosporins, and you know from the microbiologic data that these are supposed to be methicillin-resistant organisms that grow from these abscesses, the patients do quite well. They do just fine.
Mm-hmm.
So when we call that discordant therapy, where the antibiotic you're giving, at least according to the lab results, isn't supposed to work.
Right.
But indeed, they get well and do well on their own, regardless of what antibiotic you give them.
Right.
So that's actually encouraging. And again, it's probably another piece of evidence that shows that, well, maybe the antibiotics themselves aren't really having an effect. I do have to tell you and the listeners is that we specifically were looking at simple abscesses. So simple, and at least picked articles or the articles that we were discussing were looking specifically at simple abscesses. As everybody knows, or anybody who's ever seen an abscess, there's some surrounding redness, and there's some question, and we just don't know. And I'll be honest with you,
mm-hmm.
The extent of this redness, what we call cellulitis, is the real worrisome component of these things. We know we have to release and drain the pus from these abscesses, but we don't know how much and how significant and to what degree this cellulitis, overlying cellulitis, is the real culprit. What I mean by that is if you have, just a small abscess the size of a dime or a quarter, and you have just a little bit of redness around that, most of us would drain the abscess and patients go along and get better. But if you have a quarter-size abscess area of fluctuance, but you have maybe a 10-centimeter or 12-centimeter ring of redness, most of us would scratch our head and say, geez, the abscess didn't look so bad, but that big ring of cellulitis looks quite overwhelming. And I think the general gestalt is that we would treat those with antibiotics. And the honest to goodness truth is we don't know if you need to treat those with antibiotics or not. And at least here in the U.S., our National Institutes of Health have put out a call for proposals to do a very, very large multi-center trial trying to answer that exact question.
Well, Dr. Everett, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to talk about this particular study. I think it is important, and the idea being that if a patient or if our listeners develop a simple abscess, and as you've described, that using an antibiotic in this case is not going to provide any additional benefit than just simple incision and drainage and allowing the wound to heal on its own after that. And I thank you very much for taking the time to explain that.
Thank you for having me on your show.